The party's over now. The dawn is drawing very nigh. Let's creep away from the day and allow me to say goodbye.
And you're listening to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. It's now time for All Souls Forum.
Welcome to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. This week's program features Rodney Knott, and his topic is, what is manhood today? What's the meaning of masculinity in today's world? How do men respond? Rodney formed a group called Re-Engage, which is a nonprofit dedicated to helping young males become men. We're going to have this as more of a free-flowing discussion rather than a talk this week. Let's go right to the introduction, and we'll get underway.
This morning we have an interview. And I'm going to let the interviewer, our own Michael Duffy, introduce the person he's interviewing, Rodney Knott.
Good morning. I'd like to introduce Rodney Knott. He's our guest this morning, and as we sometimes do in the past, we're going to do more of a conversation between he and then open it up for a conversation with everybody here. Our topic is, what does it mean to be a man in today's society? Rodney Knott is a computer engineer, a former Neighborhood Association president, that's how I first knew him, and also a leader of an organization called Re-Engage, a not-for-profit that he formed and leads since 2009, which works with young men struggling with figuring out how to become men. Mr. Knott, welcome.
Thank you, Michael. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here. And thank you to everyone for inviting me.
Well, I'm going to start by throwing the question at you we were just discussing earlier. We've been through a generational change now in this country. Really, I'm going to focus on the economy. The economy has changed significantly, and that's had a huge impact on what it means to be a man. The changes I'm thinking of are mostly having to do with the role in 1950 that a man played as the provider in the household, where 94% of the household income typically came from the man, where men had most of the college degrees, the higher paid jobs, held the professions almost completely. Now that picture has changed dramatically. Now about half of the household income comes from the wife. Most of the leading professions, doctors, lawyers, pharmacists, are now being majority female controlled. Most of the PhDs are going to women. 60% of all the college degrees are going to women. For women who are childless under 30, they now make more in income than men of that age who are childless. So men can no longer claim to be the providers. How in that system that we're now living with today do men be men?
Well, that's a very complex issue, but I think it's one that I personally struggle with and the men that I work with struggle with. I think as a society, we have these forces at work, primarily economic, as you've spoken of, that has redefined and changed the role of men and women. And I think the difficulty is, as we move forward, how does that definition get created? Who creates it? My fear is that if we allow the media, if we allow advertisers, marketers to create it, we're going to be pretty sorry with the results. I think that, and I say that based on the media's portrayal of men and women today. If you remember, in the 50s and 60s, men were portrayed as the father knows best, Danny Thomas, My Three Sons. Men were portrayed as the intelligent, head of the household. Whereas today, if you look at the TV shows, men are usually the bumbling, you know, couch potato, as Michael said, and the women are the ones who are the smarter ones getting things done. And so I think that as a society, we have got to retake control of that conversation and begin to define for ourselves what those roles will be. Unfortunately, as a society, we don't do very good with those big conversations. We tend to ignore them and allow them to work themselves out. But in struggles of this magnitude, I don't think we should do that. I think that we should grab a hold of and say, okay, how do we want to define for the next generation what men and the roles of men and women are?
If it's not as the provider, what is it?
Well, I think that well, in the program that I have, which is Re-Engage, we provide what's called the man class. What we provide to our men is that men basically have done three basic things. Now, of course, we do a lot more than that, but we basically have done three things. Men provide for those they love, they protect those they love, and they praise those they love. Most of us men don't do very good on the praise side, but the other two we do pretty good at. And so when we talk about providing, there's more than just economic provision, although that's important. Men also provide a lot of other things to a family. And I think the statistics bear that out, married folks are healthier, they live longer, they're more stable. So I think it's more than just economics. So I don't want us to only look at that one side and say, well, if you're not providing all of the income, then you're not being a provider. No, there's a lot of other things that men bring to the table.
One of the things you just mentioned is the people they love.
Yes.
They provide praise to the people they love.
Yes.
Now, when I was a young man trying to figure out how to be a man, learning how to love was not on the list.
Well, that's one of those that again, we kind of just struggle through and allow to happen. And usually with mixed results at best. I think that, and that's why I shared that we don't do that part very well. As men, we tend to talk about cars, sports, everything but what's really going on inside of us. And with women, it's so much different. Women tell each other everything. And so I think in that way, they're a lot healthier because they share these things. Whereas men, we sit there and just, you know, hold it in. And I think that's detrimental to us in a lot of ways, not only health-wise, but emotionally. We all need those outlets because we all have the same emotions, you know. And so I think that as men, we need to find more outlets. And so what we've done is we've started a support group that meets weekly for the men so that we can have a safe environment to share that type of stuff that we normally don't.
Let me tell me if the environment that the guys you work with matches a caricature, maybe not a caricature, that I found. I'll call it the guy code. Don't cry. Never show your feelings. Never ask for directions. That's me. Never give up. Never give in. Be strong. Be aggressive. Show no fear. Show no mercy. Get rich. Get even. Get laid. And win.
Absolutely.
Is that the guy code?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
What do you say to young men for whom that's the way they look at their identity?
Well, for me, it's difficult because I've been known to drive all the way around the world just so I don't have to ask anyone for directions. And that drives my wife crazy, obviously. But I think that when we talk about, and again, what you just read off is a caricature, you know. It is, as I was sharing earlier, And this myth works for on both sides. John F. Kennedy said that the greatest enemy of the truth is oftentimes not a lie, which is deliberate, dishonest, and contrived, but it's the myth, persistent, persuasive, and unrealistic. How do you fight against a myth? And that's what we've done. We've created myths about men and women. And in creating those myths, we've set these unrealistic bars that none of us can reach. And so when we don't reach them, we become disappointed, frustrated. Because as young men, we're raised, and this is the most difficult thing that I have with the men I work with. As a young man, they were raised, if they get hurt, they don't cry. Okay? So I can't cry, all right? If I'm afraid, I can't acknowledge that. Okay, so I can't cry, I can't be afraid. But if I get angry, that's okay. I'm allowed to be angry. I'm allowed to fight. I'm allowed to play physical sports. So what many of them have learned to do is that all of their emotions are channeled through anger, because that's the one they were allowed to feel. Well, if all of your emotions are channeled through anger, you're going to have some problems. Because if I'm scared, I'm angry. If I'm hurt, I'm angry. If I'm vulnerable, I get angry. Well, you know, that's going to create a lot of problems. As these statistics, especially here in Kansas City, the violence in Kansas City, I believe, is a direct result of men not being able to process these emotions properly. They have to process them through one prism, which is anger. Now, on the other side, that myth is that women are somehow superpowered, you know. One of the things that I share when I speak is that if my daughter came to me and said, "Dad, teach me how to be a woman," well, I can tell her what I like about women. I can tell her what I don't like about women. But I can never tell her what it is to live one day as a woman. Now, everyone understands that. When I share that, everyone nods their head, yeah, okay. However, for some reason, we have endowed women with superpowers that we don't have. In other words, a woman can raise a boy to be a man, where I cannot raise a girl to be a woman. Now, how did women get this superpower that I don't have? Well, it's a myth. We've created this myth of the superwoman. And again, that's unrealistic. Women cannot reach that mark. Just as I cannot always be strong, I cannot always be unafraid. So we've got both of these myths being propagated at the same time. Well, anytime you have these unrealistic expectations, you're going to have a lot of frustrated, angry, disappointed people.
Tell us about your own background. What got you into Re-Engage? What led you to help create this and make it work?
Well, it's really funny because we were talking earlier and Michael asked me that question. I said I didn't know. But after he asked me one question after that, he said, "How many sons do you have?" And I have two. But my first son, I was actually an absentee father. Me and his mother got divorced, and I went off and traveled the country. And about the time I started Re-Engage, I started a relationship back with him. And so I think part of it was my own personal struggle in that relationship, because there was never a day that went by that I didn't think of him. You know, there was never a day that went by that he wasn't in my heart. And so I think as part of my redemption process, I had to do something more. And that was begin to work with men so they didn't repeat the same mistake that I made. But the thing that I want to share, though, is that the call that I'm responding to I don't feel like I'm some superhero and I've unlocked some secret code. The call that I'm responding to is a call for everyone. But unfortunately, because of distractions, because of circumstances, too often we ignore the call. We ignore it and say, you know what, that's not for me. I didn't hear that. But I think that as a society, we have to begin to respond to the calls that are given to us to make this world better. The thing I share with my men is that I think we were all sent here to make this world a better place. That we're all to participate in that process. And so the call that I'm responding to is not just to me. It's to all of us. What can I do to make this place better? Not just for myself, but for those around me. And so a lot of times we work on building community because one of the difficulties that's going on in the black community is that there is a loss of community in the sense of those threads that once held the community together are unraveling. Now, why is that important? It's important because our cultures are so cross-connected that what happens in one culture eventually comes to another. And I say that because the greatest increase in fatherless homes is now in the white community. Because nothing stays in one place or the other. We're cross-culturally connected. As Dr. King said, we're part of one fabric. And if that fabric gets frayed on one end, eventually it gets frayed on the other. And so I think it's important for all of us to look at what we can do to make this thing better. And that's part of this redefining manhood. We can't allow the media and others to do that. We've got to do it. And I think men are beginning to recognize that the guy code isn't working. It never did. It never worked.
Well, part of that guy code was don't be a sissy.
Yes.
Almost more than anything else, particularly as an adolescent, the definition of being a guy is don't be a sissy, don't be feminine.
Right.
Now, with the advent of gay rights and more openness and acceptance of homosexuality, how is that impacting young men's definition of themselves as not a sissy? Is that helping, changing? What's the impact?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that we're all men and women in our DNA, right? We have feminine characteristics and we have masculine characteristics. All of us do. And so I don't think that it's not right to demonstrate both of those characteristics. You know, I think that what we do is again, we define these roles to where I'm not allowed to express nurturing because that's a woman's thing. I'm not allowed to cook. That's a woman's thing. I'm not allowed to clean. That's a woman's thing. And so I think that what we have to do is we have to understand that on a molecular level, we are both. We are male and we are female. And we have to be able to comfortably connect those two sides and not feel that in doing so, I'm somehow letting one side down over the other. You know, if I am a nurturing person, then I'm no longer masculine. No. I think it's important that we embrace the totality of who we are.
Do you find that the young men you work with are more comfortable now expressing the nurturing side of themselves, particularly with the children that they have fathered?
I wish I could say that were true. But no, we have a long way to go. I think that outwardly there is more expression because it is more accepted. But I don't believe that outward expression necessarily is a window to what's going on internally. In other words, I don't believe that because I am flamboyantly doing something that I'm really expressing what's going on inside of me. I think a lot of times that's used as a smokescreen or as something, a distraction. So I don't think that we are truly at the place where men are comfortable expressing that nurturing, that feminine side. Again, I think it's important that we remember that, you know, even today, if a woman is assertive in business, she's considered being manly. You know, if she is ambitious, you know, the things that we pride men on, we look at women in another way. You know, it's almost like it reverses, depending on who it is. If it's a woman and she's doing things we assert as masculine, then it's negative. If it's a man and he asserts things that we consider feminine, then that's negative. But the truth is, again, we're both.
You know, we started out talking about the impact of the economy on the definition of men. One of the other impacts, I don't know if you call it of the economy, but that period of time in one's life before you become a fully adult man has been moved back. It used to be in the last century, or say in the early part of the 20th century, you were a man pretty much by the age of 16. Right. You had a job. You considered getting married probably in your late teens. You were responsible. You had an economic role in society. You were mostly finished with your education. There was no such thing as college in the early 1900s. Well, now there is college, and now there is post-college, where you maybe move back in with your parents. And the cliche that 30 is the new 20 captures all of that. Right. At the same time, puberty age has increasingly rolled back. Mm. Puberty used to start at 16, maybe 18. Now it's 9.
Yeah.
So we have this vast period of time of not childhood, not adulthood. The word teenager didn't even come into popular existence until about World War II. And now that has expanded to this 20-year period of time where we're not quite adult men. Is that part of the problem?
Well, I don't know if it's part of the problem, but it is a challenge that we face because, first of all, there used to be rites of passage so that a man knew when he became a man. He used to have to go out in the woods and spend the night out there by himself, or he'd have to go kill something and bring it back. You know, I mean, there were actual rites that we distinguished and said, okay, if you do this, you're a man. Well, the difficulty is that I don't think that we as people are changing. What has occurred is that children today are exposed earlier to things. The things that are happening now are not new. They were around when I was a kid, but I wasn't allowed to be exposed to them. You know, they weren't in my home. If they were on TV, I sure didn't get to watch them. And so, you know, there was a lack of exposure. Well, today, children are exposed at a very early age to issues that 40-year-olds have a hard time dealing with. You know, drugs, sex, a whole host of issues that even grown-ups have a hard time dealing with. And we're putting that on children at a younger and younger age. So I think there's the difficulty of that early exposure. But at the same time, because of these economic forces, it used to be you could graduate from high school and go to work and have a middle-class job. That's not happening anymore. Those industries aren't here anymore. Now, if you don't have a minimum of a college education, you're going to struggle. And so I think the economic forces are putting pressure on us as a society. But I think the other commercial and media forces are also playing a role. We have to understand that we are constantly bombarded with these images, with these pressures, and for a lot of folks, unfortunately, they've just chosen to not participate, to say, you know what, we're going to, you know, it's done, we can't fix this thing, let's just don't even worry about it. But again, I think that's, we have to participate in the challenges and in the issues of our time. We cannot allow these forces to just run freely. We have to participate. We have to say, you know what, I'm going to take a stand on this. I'm going to say, you know, one of the things that I read when I was growing up was that the only thing that evil men need to do evil is the silence of good men, the silence of good people. And so the thing of it is that most of the atrocities that have occurred in this world have occurred not because no one knew about them, but because people knew about them and said nothing and did nothing. And so I believe that we all have to participate in these challenges and these conflicts that are going on. And many of these conflicts are within ourselves. You know, one of the things that that keeps me humble is that I believe that the struggles that I'm going through eternally are the same struggles everyone else is going through. That I'm not special. The same fears and disappointments and things like that, we share those.
Rodney, let me throw out another fact and ask you to react to this. Young couples who are having trouble conceiving can now go to fertility clinics, and oftentimes with the new technology, ask for what gender child they would like to conceive. And the fertility clinics are reporting about 75% of the time couples who make a request ask for girls, not boys. Why is that?
Well, I think, as you have pointed out by the statistics, girls are doing a whole lot better than boys. But I think a lot of it, though, is...
Is it harder to raise boys?
No, I don't think that's it. One of the statistics that you did not read is that there are a number of women who are being, I don't want to say fertilized, whatever it is, artificially. Thank you. I didn't want to say fertilized. That didn't sound right. Thank you. But there are a number of single women that are doing that now, and I think, you know, for women, there is a place in their hearts for girls. You know, I think women love girls because, you know, and I don't mean this in a negative way, but they can dress them up. I mean, I think initially, you know, there's that dow phase you go through, but I think women just feel more comfortable with girls. I think it's more difficult. Having raised both, I think girls are way more difficult. They're more complicated. The boys, I pretty much got them figured out pretty early. Their motivations are real basic. But my girls, she was very complicated. And so for me, I think it's the opposite. I think girls are much more difficult to raise. But I think there is, for women, there is this satisfaction in raising girls. That I think is gender, not necessarily gender specific, but more gender specific in the sense of, you know, they're soft, you know, they're pretty, you know, you can do different things. Okay. You know, with a boy, you just sort of brush his hair and throw him out there in the mud and say, go for it.
Let's take it back. One last question to your program, Reengage, and then we'll open it up for everybody. I wanted to ask you about the group of young men that you work with who are, what, mostly in their late teens, 20s? Is that the age group?
No, actually, we start at 18 because, well, let me kind of explain the program that we have. We have a three-week training program where the men are given what's called the man class, which is a curriculum that I wrote with a group of psychologists and educators from the University of Missouri at Kansas City. And basically, it is lessons that a father would teach his son. Unfortunately, 80% of the children in my community are being raised by single female head of households. And so there's never been a tribe, a culture, or a society that has expected or allowed its boys to be raised to manhood by women. It's never happened. And so men bring, and it's not just for the boys, men bring something to a family. If women knew how we played with kids, they'd never leave us alone with kids again. We let them tie sheets around their necks, jump off the roof, swing too high, you know, all of those things. But in doing that, what a man teaches a child is it's okay to take risk. It's okay to try things. We're going to support you. You jump off the roof, I'm going to catch you. Okay? Hopefully. but we provide that opportunity, whereas women are more, oh, don't do that. You're going too fast. Slow down. They provide more caution. Whereas men, we're like, nah, go for it. You know, ride your bike down the hill, you know. Now, of course, we love our children, but we know that they have to learn certain things. They have to learn risk, but know that they're going to be supported. And so one of the difficulties is that with the guys I work with, and I've had guys as old as 50 in the program. This thing has been going south for a long time, starting about in the 60s. So we've had about four generations of men who have been raised by women. Unfortunately, and this is one of the things I share, we're born male and female, but we learn how to be men and women. We're not born men and women. We learn how to be. And I say that to contrast, about 100 years ago, people were getting married at 14. Because you only live till you're 30. So you had to start early. Well, as a society today, we don't do that. You know, we would frown on that today. You can't get married at 14, right? And so I think it's very difficult because there's cultural changes that occur for us to know what our roles are. And so I get a lot of the guys, and it's not just the guys I work with. It's not just my community. I think we as a society are having difficulty defining those roles. What is my place in this world? What am I supposed to do? You know, it used to be the roles were pretty much set in stone, in concrete. Not today. They're so fluid. I mean, some folks like me, I'm a so-called gentleman. I open the door for women. You would be surprised. There are women today that take offense to that. I can open it myself. Well, I know that. I'm not doing it because you cannot do it. I'm doing it because I choose to do it. And so, you know, there's just so much fluidity to these roles that it makes it difficult for men. But anyway, so after the three-week training, we provide an opportunity for these guys to go to work. Right now we're working primarily in the construction trade. So the guys leave and then they're able to go to work on a construction site. So as part of that three-week training, and don't get me wrong, I am not so arrogant to believe that 3 weeks with me changes anybody's life, okay? I wish that were true, but it's not. But what I hope to do is I hope to plant the seed that these guys will nurture and water and become a tree, okay? So I just plant seeds. But anyway, at the end of the 3 weeks, they go to work. So what we do is we take a guy who has been unemployed, disengaged from his family, and in 3 weeks, hopefully they get reengaged back in their families, become tax-paying citizens and begin to work in their community. Because the three things that they have to do is, number one, they've got to get a mentor and work with them. Number two, they've got to volunteer 1 week in a month in their community. And number three, they have to come to this weekly support group. So we hope to provide ongoing support for these guys, because 3 weeks is not enough, you know. But my thing is that we have to provide the training and the tools for these guys to understand what is manhood. Because for many of them, it's not that they don't want to be. They don't know how. No one's ever taught them. And we assume as a society, as you said, when you reach a certain age, you're a man. Well, no, you're not. You're not. Because if no one has taught you what you need to do, then you're not going to be. You don't know. And then you have to get your view of manhood from the caricatures of TV, of music videos, of movies. And believe me, those caricatures are bad. Okay? They are not good.
And Rodney, a lot of those accounts of how to be a man really come from their peers now.
Absolutely.
You mentioned the importance of mentors. It's my perception that a lot of young men don't have older men to show them the way.
One of the most touching and difficult things that happened was that at a graduation, I hugged one of the guys. And he said that's the first time a man had ever hugged him in his life. Can you imagine that? The first time a man had ever hugged him in his entire life. That's scary. Because, again, what that does is it gives him this false sense of manhood. And that sense of manhood is very terrifying. It's very frightening for me. Because that whole nurturing thing is just not there. And I don't think we want a society where it's full of men that don't know how to nurture. I don't think we want that. I think that's a pretty ugly scenario.
Well, this new view of manhood is obviously one that's evolving. We're all figuring this out.
Yes.
Let's stop at this point and open it up for discussion. But first...
Yes, without further ado, it's time we take a break. We owe you some messages. You're listening to the All Souls Forum here on KKFI. Rodney Knott is talking about what it takes to be a man in today's world. This program was recorded at the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church in Kansas City, Missouri, on November 24th of 2013. We owe you some messages. Let's do those, and we'll come back with some more conversation and questions with Rodney Knott.
Next time on L.A. Theater Works, the legendary story of one of America's most stunning corporate collapses. A world leader in electricity and gas goes supernova, only to implode in the public eye. In Enron, the darkly funny play by Lucy Prebble, starring Gregory Itzen as Kenneth Lay and Steven Weber as Jeffrey Skilling, Wednesday from 7 to 9 p.m. On the next Sprouts, exploration of sexual assault on college campuses, including college administration's cover-ups of reports of rape, as well as Title IX suits as a new tool to fight rape on campus. That Sprouts Thursday at noon.
Federal court ruling on Detroit bankruptcy jeopardizes public employee pensions nationally.
The threat of dam projects to the people of Iraq.
Ronald Reagan on the wrong side of history regarding U.S. policy toward apartheid South Africa and Nelson Mandela.
All that and more on Between the Lines, Friday morning at 9 a.m.
Hello, this is Martha Lally, producer of KKFI's Anything Goes show with Charles Ferrugia and Carol Barta. Carol, on our next show, we look at Kansas City's theater scene.
Martha, theater in Kansas City is vibrant and exciting, and the Quality Hill Playhouse has been an important part of our city's entertainment scene. Director Kent Barnhart and Lindsay McKee will be with us.
See you here on KKFI's Anything Goes show, Fridays at noon.
You said you can't get much done in 3 weeks, and I understand that. I mean, as a teacher, are you training people to go out and do what you do? Are some of the people that you're working with then carrying through to work with other people?
Yes, ma'am. What I believe is that there's always a rippling effect, that whereas I touch one life, they go out and touch other lives. And so there's this rippling effect. The biggest recruiter for my program are the guys that have gone through it. They say, well, I've got a cousin, I've got a brother, I've got an uncle who needs this. And so, you know, the really fun part about what I do is that these guys know something is missing. They just don't know what it is. But if you present it to them, they get it. They get it in the sense of they know something has been missing in their lives. They didn't know what it was, but if you provide it to them, they get it. Now, as far as me training others, I would love to do that because we're currently in St. Louis, and I'm about to go to Florida and North Carolina. And so I'm hoping that I will, because I'm only one man, and so I'm hoping that before long I'll be able to train others to go out and do this, because no one person, no one organization is going to fix this. This thing is bad on so many levels that it's going to take all of us. I hope that answered your question.
I've always suspected that the man code that Michael was referring to was primarily designed by the upper levels of society to provide adequate cannon fodder for the military, for all the wars we're fighting. So what would you say to someone that really all you need to do is put these young men into the military and they'll make men out of them?
Well, I think that the headlines that we're reading now about the problems in the military are proof enough that that's not the answer. Because the men that they're creating seem to have a lot of problems. I mean, we have the returning veterans that are going through their challenges, plus we've got, you know, this epidemic of sexual assaults in the military that has been going on for decades. So I don't know if I would hold them up as the poster child for creating men, because whereas they do have some virtues, they do have some benefits, I think we also have to look at the negatives of that as well. One of the things that I had hoped when we began to allow women into the military was that we would get that balance. Unfortunately, in the military, there's only one standard, and that's that guy code standard. So you've got women that are trying to meet that code as well. And so we didn't get the balance I had hoped for, because everyone's focused on being the hardest, the meanest, the toughest. That hasn't worked out so good.
You mentioned other cities, but are you active in Kansas City?
Yes, ma'am, but not as much as I would like to be. Unfortunately, because of what we're doing, it's so innovative and it's so unique, we haven't received the funding that I'd hoped for. We do the training, and it costs us about $700 per man. So for $700, again, we take someone that's unemployed, a burden on society, disengaged from his family, and change all that. But you would think we'd have folks running, you know, to join us and help us, but that's not the case. One of the things I've learned about the nonprofit world is that they're not very innovative. Whereas business needs innovation to continue. The nonprofit world, not so much. If I were opening a soup kitchen, I would have tons of soup and money. But I don't believe that's the answer. The solution to poverty, to crime, to drugs, is not food stamps. It's not free giveaways. It's a job. It's just that simple. You know, I wish I could tell you that this is brain surgery and I've just cracked some code, but I have not. It is just that simple. It's a job. So we're not as as active in Kansas City as I'd like. This year, we've only done two trainings. But let me share this. Out of the 18 guys we've trained this year, 15 of them are working full-time right now. But that's not the cool part. The cool part is that five of those guys went out and got their own jobs. They didn't even wait on me because they realized I haven't been doing what I should be. And so they said, I'm going to go get my own job. And so that's the cool part. So I wish there was more support in Kansas City, and I'm hoping that will change. Usually, you know, what happens is that you're successful, and then everybody comes along and says, oh, yeah, we were with you from the beginning. We knew you were going to make it.
My comment starts with the fact to what you're talking about, mothers and sons. When I knew I was going to be a mother, hoping for boys. I didn't want girls. I didn't want frilly, you know, people, dolly kind of things. I thought, no. So my first child was a girl, but I ended up with three sons. And believe me, that is the biggest problem of my life. And it has been. They have been. Because the father was more or less an absentee father. And he had never been fathered properly. So there's that thing. They didn't have the male influence. But frankly, overall, I think the biggest challenge is television and movies and all that stuff that's teaching kids all this nonsense, how they can get rich, how they can do this, how they can do that. And it's just poisoning the whole environment, even for the people at home trying to develop values with their children. And I know you can't change that, but we all need to try it, I think.
Yes, ma'am, and that's the importance of all of us participating. I couldn't agree more. If you watch movies, and one of the things that I have, the guys that come to my class, their definition of being a man is you drink, you stay out late, you do whatever you want, you don't work, and they get this stuff not from home, they get it from the media. You know, they get it from the movies. You know, everybody in the movies or in these music videos is riding around on jets and no one's working and everybody's drinking and partying. And it's like, no, that's not reality. But if you're at a impressionable age, unfortunately, perception is reality. And they really believe that if they do nothing, someone's going to give them a jet, someone's going to give them money, and they're just going to, you know, live the rest of their lives partying and having a good time. Unfortunately, they find out pretty quickly that that's not going to happen.
Hi. I taught at the alternative schools, high schools in Kansas City, Missouri. And we had a young men's group because it went clear to you're 21. You can stay at the schools in Kansas City. This issue came up, and I've never known how to quite address it, being from not an African-American culture, and especially I was never in a lower social economic culture, which it comes across. Some of the boys brought up the problem of being referred to all the time from their mothers as my baby. And one of the guys said, you know, my brother's getting a divorce. He came back home, and I thought he should have stuck it out with his wife and talked more, but my mom said, that's okay, baby. We'll take care of it. And he said, this is your mother, this is him. Your mother is the most important person in your life because she's the one that raised you. And when the most important person in your life still sees you as a baby, you know you can do things because you can always go back to her because you're a baby there. How do you address that issue?
Well, basically, you've brought up two. And there are two challenges that I face always. The first is that there's a process going on which has been documented. It's called the infantization, which is basically keeping black males as children. The guys they hang out with, my boys, they live in a crib. Their women are mama, right? So there's this culture of keeping them as children. But there's another culture, there's another challenge that you brought up as well, and that is that they're being raised in a maternal society, right? But we live in a paternal society, okay? We live in a male society, but they're being raised in a female society. Most of these guys never have a relationship with any men. Their moms have their girlfriends, they have their grandmoms, they have their aunties, but there are no men. So, therefore, again, they're being raised in this false identity, you know, that keeps them children. One of the things that, and I'll probably be crucified for this later, but one of the things that I think we need to do is, as a race of people, we have got to cut the symbiotic umbilical cord that blacks have to whites, in the sense of we are always seen as the wayward child that has to be fixed, that has to be taken care of. The time has come for us to take our full partnership in this society and stop being treated as the children. And the way we have to do that is we've got to take more responsibility for ourselves. The challenge that I place to the people that I work with and to my community is, and this was, we were featured in a documentary called We Are Superman. Not to be confused with Waiting for Superman. That's another one. And this was talking about the transformation of 31st and Truce right here in Kansas City. For many of us who know, Truce has always been the historical dividing line in Kansas City between black and white, rich, poor, east, west. Well, one of the things that I had given that kind of started that whole We Are Superman process is that the time has come for us to stop waiting on some superhero to come and fix our community. I tell people, Superman is in a cave surrounded by kryptonite. He's not coming. Okay? What we have to do is we have to begin to raise up the supermen and superwomen in our community to do what needs to be done. These are our children that we're losing, generation after generation after generation. It is up to us to do what needs to be done and stop waiting on others to come and fix us. We've got to do it.
Thank you. I wish you'd come talk to his teachers when I was still working. I'm retired now. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have something that's not really my question. That will come next, but you talked about needing money. Perhaps what you could do is tell the people here, if they wanted to help support your project, how would they do it?
Yes, ma'am. They could donate online. We do have a website called reengageinc.org. And so you can donate online, or you can, our mailing address is P.O. Box 5441, Kansas City, Missouri, 64131. Our offices are on 31st and Truth, so if anyone wants to come by during one of our trainings, you're more than welcome. We even allow women in, so as long as you don't say anything. I'm kidding.
Okay, now I have my question. I have four grandchildren. Two have been raised in a family where the parents have been married since they were late teens. They've been married more than 25 years now. It's been a very stable thing. They've gotten the three things that you were talking about, the praise and the protection and the provision. My other two grandchildren have been raised in a family where the father is the antithesis of all of those things, and it concerns me how they'll grow up feeling about men in general. So what advice do you have for something like that?
My suggestion is, number one, to love them with everything you got. I have found that as men, and this is one thing that I run into, because a lot of times I look for mentors. And so a lot of times the guys will say, well, I'm not black, I haven't been poor, I don't know how to do this. But the thing that we all look for as human beings is someone to genuinely care about us. someone to genuinely want our best interests. Now, is it easier if we're the same tribe? Absolutely. But it doesn't mean it is impossible. We all look for the same things. And so my first suggestion would be to love them with everything you got. But my second suggestion would be to find for them some stability in the community, someone willing to come and give them, mentor to them. One of the things that I share is that when I was growing up, there was a community that raised me. It wasn't just my family. If I did something three blocks away, by the time I got home, they knew it and was waiting on me, right? When I was growing up, there were successful people around me. So even I was blessed that my father was there and engaged. But even if he hadn't have been, I had these other role models around me. Well, today that's not happening. Today we are all these little islands adrift by ourselves. And so our challenges we think are just ours. But they're not. We have to once again come back as a community and say, I'm looking out for you. I care about you. We're losing that. We're losing that. And I think if we do, it's going to get a lot worse. You know, one of the things that has held us together as a country, as a society, has been that thread of we, you know, we may go out and do our own thing, but we always knew that there was this unity that brought us together, this care, this concern for one another. And when we got pushed to the edge, it always came out. Now, when everything is going good, we don't usually have it, right? But when things got challenging, like world wars, like racial issues, like, you know, these real challenges, we came together. And I think that's what we have to do now. We've got to be willing to say, let's come together. Let's be a community again.
Do we have another minute? Really?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
let me throw in a last question that's been troubling me. Most of the young men that you work with, African-American, low-income, inner-city folks, have the extra layer of challenge in figuring out their masculinity of, I'll call the new Jim Crow, that many of these young men have arrest records. Yes. They have jail time records, which adds an entire layer of difficulty. They can't vote. It's hard for them to get housing. And most of all, it's hard for them to get a job.
Right.
What do you say to them when they're trying to cope with this new Jim Crow problem?
Well, unfortunately, as a black American, I'm sorry, I don't like using the term African American, so forgive me. I'm an American that happens to be black. Because I think if we start going tribal again, I'm a German American, I'm an Italian American, we're not going to get very far. So forgive me, but I'm an American that happens to be black. But anyway, what I think, we have always had a more difficult challenge. But the reason, I'm glad you brought this up, Michael, because the reason that I put this staffing, I added a staffing component to my training. Because as an employer, you don't know me from Adam. And if I come to you and all you know about me is what's on this paper, and it's not good, no matter how I dazzle you in the interview, you can't hire me. I'm too risky. You've got your customers, you've got your employees, you've got all these things to worry about. So what we said was, okay, we get it. We're going to mitigate your risk. The guys will work for us under our liability, under our workman's compensation. We'll take care of their payroll, their taxes. Just let them work for you for 3 months, 6 months. See how they do. After 3 months, 6 months, you see them show up every day. You see them working their butts off. So now this isn't so important because now you have a relationship. And that's how we've been able to address a lot of those challenges, because a lot of the guys, even if they don't have a criminal background, their work history is not good. You know, they may not have worked in 2 or 3 years. The thing we have to understand is this. For many of these guys, there's two things, and then I'll be done. For many of these guys, when they are born, they're automatically put in the system from birth, right? Because if you're born to a single female head of household, you're automatically now a dependent of the state. They take care of you, right? So for them, they may not have seen anyone do any real work in